The audible of the best in Bitcoin. This is the Cryptoconomy. Only 6 days away before the launch of Swan Bitcoin. I've been wanting this for ages. A quick, simple way to auto buy Bitcoin. That is Swan Bitcoin. A huge shout out and thank you to those guys for supporting the podcast. And don't forget to check them out. We are right around the corner. All right, guys. Welcome back to the show. I have got a really good read that bounces off kind of the foundation we laid in the last episode. Sorry for the gap there. I know everybody's in quarantine, so you're looking for podcasting content, and guy has failed to deliver. Bad. But I've read 4 or 5 articles on this now, and the only one, the best one so far, I think, and more importantly, has the ability to take action, like to actually contact like your senator and like your congressman immediately, links to that in the article, is from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. So that's the one I'm going to link to, and that's the one I'm going to read. Because I think this is really, really important, and it's so easy to let a government will always take, they will never let a crisis go to waste. When something is in the news nonstop for 2 weeks, you should always ask, what is Congress doing behind the scenes? What bill is about to get passed that it would be absolutely terrible if it was during any other circumstance, that it would be the top news story, because that's what's happening. Again, this is on EFF.org, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and the article is titled, "The Graham-Blumenthal Bill is an Attack on Online Speech and Security," and it's by Elliot Harmon. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into the read, and then I really want to dig into this afterward. Members of Congress have mounted a major threat to your freedom of speech and privacy online. Senators Lindsey Graham, Republican from South Carolina, and Richard Blumenthal, Democrat from Connecticut, recently introduced a bill that would undermine key protections for internet speech in U.S. law. It would also expose providers of the private messaging services we all rely on to a serious legal risk, potentially forcing them to undermine their own tools' security. The so-called Earn It Act, or S-3398, is an attack on speech, security, and innovation. Congress must reject it. The bill deals with the very serious issue of child exploitation online, but it offers no meaningful solutions. It doesn't help organizations that support victims. It doesn't equip law enforcement agencies with resources to investigate claims of child exploitation or training in how to use online platforms to catch perpetrators. Rather, the bill's authors have shrewdly used defending children as the pretense for an attack on our free speech and security online. The Earn It Act would create a, quote, National Commission on Online Child Sexual Exploitation Prevention, end quote, tasked with developing, quote, best practices for owners of internet platforms to prevent, reduce, and respond to child exploitation online. But far from mere recommendations, those best practices would essentially become legal requirements. If a platform failed to adhere to them, it would lose essential legal protections for free speech. Once the commission completed its recommendations, the Attorney General, the Secretary of Homeland Security, and the Chair of the Federal Trade Commission would approve or veto the best practices. If they all agreed, then Congress would have an extremely short timeline to debate the best practices and write them into law without amendments. Make no mistake. The Earn It Act is a vehicle to undermine end-to-end encryption. The Earn It Act would censor innocent people. The Graham-Blumenthal bill undermines Section 230, the most important law protecting free speech online. Section 230 enforces the common sense principle that if you say something illegal online, you should be the one held responsible, not the website or platform where you said it, with some important exceptions. Section 230 has played a critical role in the development of the modern internet. Thanks to Section 230, online platforms can allow users to share their thoughts without fear that something they say could cost them millions of dollars or even jail time. In weakening Section 230, Congress risks forcing platforms to kick innocent people off the internet entirely, as has already happened with the disastrous consequences of SESTA FOSTA. When platforms are forced to become more restrictive in what they allow on their sites, marginalized users are disproportionately silenced. The Earn It Act would give platforms two choices: either adhere to the Commission's recommended best practices, or be ready to convince a judge that it has implemented reasonable measures relating to preventing online child exploitation. In practice, that means that if a platform didn't adhere to the best practices, it would be extremely difficult and costly for an internet company to have a case relating to child exploitation dismissed under Section 230. The Earn It Act doesn't just undermine Section 230. It also violates the First Amendment rights of both platforms and their users. As EFF explained in a letter to Congress, the Earn It Act seeks to regulate how platforms manage online speech. Yet, internet platforms' editorial activities are protected from government interference by the First Amendment. Additionally, to pass constitutional scrutiny, a law that regulates the content of speech must be as narrowly tailored as possible to avoid chilling legitimate speech. But the Earn It Act isn't narrowly tailored at all. As we explain in our letter, it would inevitably lead platforms to become more restrictive in the types of speech they allow, particularly in their approach to sexual speech, silencing innocent users in the process. The Earn It Act would undermine our security. Make no mistake, the Earn It Act is a vehicle to undermine end-to-end encryption. Attorney General William Barr has repeatedly blamed encryption for sexual crimes against children. He's far from the only one. Barr joins a long history of government officials from both parties demanding that encryption providers compromise their user security. Under the Earn It Act, the commission would have 19 members, three of which are the Attorney General, the Secretary of Homeland Security, and the chair of the Federal Trade Commission. The best practices would pass first-round voting if 14 out of the 19 commissioners, including the agency heads, approved them. After that vote, the three agency heads would then have the power to unanimously approve the best practices for a vote by Congress or reject them. In other words, any one of the three agency heads could scrap the best practices unilaterally. That structure all but guarantees that the best practices that come before Congress will include a direct attack on our right to communicate privately and securely. One of the government officials could use their veto power to pressure the rest of the commission to include it. The bill includes language claiming that the bill won't be used to, quote, require a provider to search, screen, or scan, quote unquote, for unlawful material. But that's a mere fig leaf. It would be trivially easy for the commission to present best practices that don't explicitly require scanning, but are only implementable by scanning, or not offering private messaging at all. All roads lead to disaster for internet users. When a draft version of the Graham-Blumenthal bill leaked in January, EFF stood with a host of experts to explain what a disaster the bill would be for privacy and free speech. We explained that the Earn It Act represented a major abandonment of Congress's duties. Laws restricting speech online require a careful, transparent lawmaking process. Congress should not offload that duty to an unelected commission, and certainly not an unelected commission stacked with law enforcement surrogates. The bill's authors responded by introducing the bill's new structure, where the commission recommends best practices, three government officials approve or veto them, and then they're fast-tracked through Congress. Far from a solution, this convoluted approach underscores the Earn It Act's inherent flaw. It lets the Attorney General use the best practices as a pretense to advance his own agenda. To understand why, consider how the system would play out in practice. The bill says that two members of the commission must have, quote, current experience in matters related to constitutional law, consumer protection, or privacy, end quote. But that's hardly a balance. Those two members could easily be outvoted by the rest of the commission, including law enforcement advocates, representatives from big tech companies, and the three agency heads. Imagine a scenario in which the Attorney General, or one of the other two government officials, insisted on implementing a best practice that undermined encryption, which, as we've already discussed, is all but guaranteed. They could easily strong-arm the commission by vetoing any set of best practices that didn't include their proposal. It gets worse. Now suppose that no best practices get approved by Congress, either because of a standoff between government officials and the other members of the commission, or because Congress failed to approve them in the short timeline required. That outcome could be the worst of all. If Congress doesn't approve a best practices bill within 4 years of the time the Earn It Act passes, then Section 230 protections would be weakened for all online platforms, regardless of what measures they take to curb online child exploitation. More likely, the commission would take every step it could to avoid that scenario. In other words, Attorney General Barr would have internet platforms right where he wants them, ready to compromise their users' security and privacy in order to avoid serious repercussions, including both civil and criminal liability. The platforms would be able to maintain their legal protections so long as they left users out in the cold, making all of us more susceptible to criminals online. A reminder, the Earn It Act doesn't support children. As we mentioned when we wrote about the prior version of Earn It, Section 230 does not exempt online intermediaries from liability for a violation of federal criminal law. If a platform knowingly distributes child exploitation imagery, then the Department of Justice can and must enforce the law. What's more, if an internet company finds sexual abuse material on its platform, the law requires it to provide that information to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and to cooperate with law enforcement investigations. EFF and a coalition of organizations recently sent a letter calling on Congress to discard the Earn It Act and instead focus on measures that would provide support to those working to help children. Quote, "While we applaud Congress's desire to address the sexual exploitation of children online, a more effective way to address that crisis would be to better equip law enforcement agencies to investigate it by adding staffing and funding to more effectively use their current lawful investigative tools. Law enforcement agencies in the United States at all levels, federal, state, local, and tribal, do not have sufficient personnel or technical resources to investigate and prosecute all of the cases that internet service providers currently refer to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Indeed, we understand that U.S. law enforcement prosecutes only a small fraction of the cases that NCMEC refers to them." End quote. Congress ought to ask the hard questions about why so few NCMEC reports lead to arrests. It ought to consider whether law enforcement agencies need additional training and resources in order to use the internet to find perpetrators. In the meantime, Congress must reject the Graham-Blumenthal bill, undermining our free speech and privacy is not the way to protect children. And that is the article from EFF.org. And twice in this, at the beginning and at the end, there is a link to Take Action, which is the EFF's automated thing to find your explicit, your specific representatives and send both your congressmen and senators and send a message specifically to them. That's the top reason why I chose to read this article. And I'm a big supporter of the EFF, and I just did this myself. If we could get everyone who listens to this show, if we get a third of people who listen to this show, to actually just go to the website right now and send that to their representatives, this is a ridiculous bill. And this is exactly the sort of conditions where shit like this gets pushed through and nobody has any time to react to it. And that is what they're trying to do. Don't let them catch us with our pants down. Just go do it. It's only going to take a couple of seconds, and it does actually make a difference, as bullshit as the entire system is. If they don't even hear from us, they'll have no idea what a joke this is. They're all stupid and ignorant. They need to be informed that they are destroying privacy and security online. So please take a second. Let's go ahead and hit our sponsor real quick, and then I want to talk a lot about this bill. All right. So getting into this one, just for an overview of what's going on here, Section 230 that they're talking about, this is what's being routed around. So this is the built-in, kind of no questions asked protection for the platforms, the servers, the routers, the everybody who is housing or transmitting the data is not liable for what the information says. The person who sent the message, if there is a criminal message of some sort, child pornography or the call to kill somebody or something like that, something was uploaded, it's not the server's fault, it's the uploader who committed the crime. And this is for the same obvious reasons that, if my neighbor borrows a power tool and kills his wife with it, I am not guilty of murder. He is. So Earnit, which is an awful name, it just screams draconian nonsense, literally says that the commission will get to tell companies how they have to comply, and that if they don't, they are liable for any criminal or harmful data that moves across their servers. So, unless they do A, B, and C, then their neighbor using their power tools makes them a murderer. One of the other articles I read, there was an attempt at a defense by saying the analogy is actually a car manufacturer being liable for the defects that, injure somebody else. And it was actually another article on EFF, I think, that used this. But they were which is a terrible analogy. It clearly doesn't work because it's not a defect that allows someone else to just have a conversation. Encryption is not a defect. Encryption is how you maintain any semblance of privacy on someone else's server. You have to have end-to-end encryption, and the entire network is other people's servers. The entire internet. But they said, no, it's a whole lot more like making Toyota pay when a bank robber makes a getaway in a Prius. I thought that was a pretty good analogy. And the dumbest thing about this bill, that's a tall order. There's a lot of dumb things about this. But if they are too incompetent, if the commission is too incompetent or belligerent, if they're too stubborn to actually come to an agreement and institute a set of best practices, then everyone loses their Section 230 protections by default. So it is literally it's stealing the rights from them and then holding it hostage to give it back to them. Because the default is if 4 years go by and they can't figure something out, then the companies just lose the free speech protection. The First Amendment is just out the window. So unless they do what the commission says, It's already gone. Like, as soon as this is enacted, it's gone. And the only way out is to, you know, earn it, which apparently is just bending over and letting them rail you in the ass for whatever they're going to tell you what to do. And of course, these people are not voted. These people are not elected in. These are going to be appointed by Congress, aside from the built-in encryption-hating people who are running it, the top three final say people in this thing that we already know want to outlaw encryption outright and would do so if given the authority, which they are basically giving themselves. So this is just wonderful, right? Try to imagine how Bitcoin would work if this is the way it was designed. Like, somebody is just straight awful at adversarial thinking. This entire debacle is just another great example of the theory we talked about in the last episode of the bootleggers and Baptists. This is command and control regulation at its finest. They're literally telling the platforms exactly what they should do. And with a group of people who would inherently not have the slightest clue or care what the cost or consequences of these quote-unquote best practices, which is an oxymoron for the commission itself. There's no way that they would come up with the best anything for the people who are actually involved in it in regards to internet security and privacy. So they don't care what it costs. They don't care how difficult it is to actually implement. And the only two people on the commission actually have to know what the hell they're talking about with the tech or the privacy. So you think a bunch of law enforcement authoritarians and corrupt politicians have even a semblance of a clue? Like, what goes into running or moderating a platform with hundreds of millions of users? I would bet good money that neither the authors of this bill nor any of the default appointees to this commission could set up their home router. And how this is divvied up. So it takes 14 out of the 19 to win the vote for implementing the best practices. And so you need five, right? You need five people to vote down a set of really dumb, terrible practices, or, you know, privacy obliterating practices that are suggested to these platforms. They only require that two people on the commission have any knowledge of, quote, constitutional law, consumer protection, or privacy. Hashtag not a coincidence that is significantly less than five. That's not even throwing privacy and security concerns a bone here. It's like sending them a picture of a bone by email. This is truly anti-speech, anti-security. And the four that they listed or whatever, the so-called Earn It Act is anti-speech, anti-security, anti-innovation, and unnecessary. That's the big point. Elliot detailed this like later on in the article, and I discussed this yesterday as well, that this is unnecessary, that they're already legally required to send any information. All these platforms and networks are legally required to send any information to the authorities that they find in regards to criminal activity. This adds nothing to that previous obligation. It genuinely just sets up an unelected, unaccountable commission for arbitrarily defined command and control regulation on what those internet platforms must now do to allow government to see the contents of everyone's messages. Because just a few might be doing something unsavory. And of course, this will stop child exploitation, which is a laughable claim. Like, I'm not even going to address it because it's just a scapegoat. It is total top of the mountain horseshit, framing the debate as if it's a question between catching child exploitators or not is a fallacy in the first place, because it won't do that at all. The only people that will get hurt by this are average citizens, that will put them at far greater direct and indirect risk of abuse, violations of privacy, erosions of the First Amendment, an inevitable increase, huge increase in hacks and data loss, and another huge increase in backdoor corruption and political leveraging. Just think about this as a tool. Like, what's the most potent use of a tool like this to be able to see everybody's messages? In an age where one tweet that quotes five out-of-context words from somebody spoken a decade ago can obliterate their reputation in a matter of days, the one most potent use of this tool is for leverage to control people. Every tool will find its highest value use. That is what this will be used for. I'm sure there will be five highly publicized cases of stopping child exploiters who were using Facebook Messenger to begin with because they were morons. But 99% of this will be used for abuse. And they're never going to one day decide that they shouldn't have this power. They're never going to like walk back the funding and be like, oh, well, this wasn't working. That, you know, the number of, you know, contracts and subsequent agreements and the mountain of litigation that will come with this. Like every piece of data from every agency or statistic that shows that, you know, after the end of this, that child exploitation increased, you know, along with the bribery, the hacking and the data loss. They'll only ever decide that it was because they didn't take enough authority, and they'll give the age-old, never-ending, print it every single time they fail bullshit. But imagine how much worse it would have been if we weren't here. The cost to this would be orders of magnitude worse than anything productive or useful they do with it. And not to mention, you know, the numerous leaks in the past, you know, 10 to 20 years that we know how deeply a lot of very dirty government institutions, the CIA and political institutions, are tied to the global sex trade. To think that a set of institutions that are so deeply tied to it already are somehow anywhere close to a solution to it is just kind of a parody in and of itself. Also, Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. This genuinely just puts a self-directed commission in charge of privacy and freedom of speech. There's the workaround that. Well, first, actually, again, this was talked about yesterday, is how it makes networks or platforms and these companies the police of their own customers. That's one of the things that government has been so good at, is destroying the relationship between the customer and the service, is that the service will literally have to treat their customers as criminals by default. It's kind of like what, you know, they've done it with the police, is that they are at odds. Police, the idea that they are protect and serve is becoming increasingly a joke, because everyone is guilty until essentially they prove their innocence. Everyone is out to kill them unless they get down on the ground and take a knee to the back of the neck. And, you know, it's obliterated the medical industry because they force middlemen and bureaucracy into every single step of the process. It's ruined education by removing any sense that there is a price too high to pay, and putting government funding between every student and the school. And now it's they're begging to get into the schools. Like, it's become this self-aggrandizing, self-fulfilling thing. It's just like, we do it for the school, not for us. It's made finance just a trick of accounting to invent new money to buy up assets. How do we circulate this fractional reserve to, you know, buy back our stocks and make numbers go up and all this nonsense, when we've lost all our productivity, we've lost our manufacturing, and our biggest export is printed paper, the dollar, that is. And it's just another great example of that. Customers will go in, and companies will literally be afraid of their customers, and then they will rightfully try to protect themselves. They will watch for every single thing they do. They will do every single thing they can to make sure that everything is clean and not controversial. They will over-police like crazy. There will be A, B, and C are against the law, and D, E, and F are questionable, and G, H, and I are like, maybe, I don't know, and they'll just ban the whole run of stuff. They won't stop at what's illegal because they're scared to death. This is going to prop up a massive... So another little thing about Section 230 is that what does it mean to for them not to be liable? Like so the default is that they lose the protections of Section 230 if it expires, if they don't get best practices actually put in place. This means that lawyers, go back to the bootleggers and Baptist theory. Who are the bootleggers? Who are the ones that are going to make bank by having this implemented? Lawyers. You know the bloated, ridiculous litigation industry we have in America? You know where rules are so convoluted and idiotic that patent trolls can buy a generic idea that they could not implement if given the remainder of their lives and $1 billion, can make a living stealing from the people who actually invent and produce those things? Yes, that industry that drains billions of dollars out of productive people every year just because the laws make it so easy to rob people that just getting involved in a lawsuit, just having a lawsuit brought upon you, even if it's a pointless loss, but would earn a decent settlement because the cost of even winning a lawsuit can destroy a small business. That is going to profit massively because it means everybody who is involved in any sort of criminal activity or any victim that has anything to do with, I guarantee you it'll go down to social bullying or something. Like the end result of this, like this is just another increment in a long series of trying to make, trying to censor. Like it's just another of the a significant step of the many towards this end goal. And it would allow people, governments, lawyers, the whole list to attack the websites, platforms, networks, anything that criminals were used in aiding their crime or otherwise some bad habit or highly controversial opinion. If anybody thinks that this will stop and solely be for child exploitation, they are just deeply, deeply naive. You know, Snowden is still forced to live in Russia, of all places, for his freedom. You know, Assange has been in a cement box, isolated, and treated like a terrorist threat. You know, he was placed in a bulletproof glass box in his sham prison court. It's literally like a jail with like a court in it. And he could not hear his own proceedings or speak with his legal team. Did he murder 100 people? Did he slit somebody's throat? Did he do anything other than reveal torture, murder, and corruption of those in power? No. That is all he did. None of which have yet to be punished. The person getting punished and treated like he's about to blow up the world, apparently, is Assange, just for telling us about it. And that encryption is exactly what allowed that to happen. We would not know the extent of our own government's crimes without people exactly like him. If you don't think that this avenue won't be used for that sort of thing above any and all else, then we're kidding ourselves. We're kidding ourselves. Every single avenue they have, every twist of every legal word that they can change the definition of to attack Snowden, to attack Assange, any excuse they can come up with, they will use. This will be another wonderful tool for that exact purpose. There's another quote, and I didn't actually save which one. I think it was this article. I don't know. I read like 6 articles on this. But the quote is, I think this is from the EFF article, is you can't have an internet where messages are screened en masse and also have end-to-end encryption any more than you can create backdoors that are only going to be used by the good guys. The two are mutually exclusive. Concepts like client-side scanning aren't a clever route around this. Such scanning is just another way to break end-to-end encryption. Either the message remains private to everyone but its recipients, or it's available to others. End quote. So what's the client side scanning thing? So I went digging into this to see exactly how this works. What I think will happen is that as basically there's pushback against this, because there's going to be a lot of people who are affected by it, including government agencies, some law enforcement themselves, the military, congressmen and women, like they use encrypted messaging. So I think what will end up happening is they'll probably try to extend an olive branch by, trying to create some really narrow definition of what encryption is exempt, or that we don't want to stop encryption, but simply make the client side scanning, which absolutely breaks the encryption. It destroys the idea that you can have a private conversation. And this was discussed in a few articles, so I kind of went digging. And it makes me wonder if, like they're going to make it appear as if the client side scanning is, just like to appease everybody. But I think this is a decent example probably of just a smart negotiation tactic. You ask for something way beyond what you were seeking, or that you won't get. And then you can kind of pretend that you walked it back and then present the plan that you actually wanted. And, that gives them the main authority, that key piece that they wanted to begin with. And they come out looking like they compromised. And, what is the compromise? It's, two wolves compromising on how much of the sheep to eat for dinner. So that's why this thing just has to be shut down completely. This is just utter regulatory garbage. And the client side, I didn't go into the client side scanning thing. So how this would likely be implemented, according to a couple of things I read, is let's take them at their word and say it will be truly client side. And that what they'll have is there will be a database added to by, the commission, or it's somebody, whoever's maintaining this database of hashes. So it's not actually the data itself. It's just hashes of that data of like that specific image or that specific video or something like that. And then those hashes would be downloaded onto the client, and the software would automatically scan for a match to those hashes in any of those messages. And this is perceived as like, now we're not reading the whole message. We're just reading hashes. And obviously you can't reverse a hash. You don't get any discernible information about it. Isn't this a great way to do it? Well, first off is that you have no idea what the hashes are either. Unless your client just brute forces the entire list of hashes, you don't know if those hashes are just words for, Assange, or you have no idea what it is. You don't know if it's a hash of an image. Like it's the client is just going to check for anything that matches those hashes. So it could be a whole realm of things. And then the client default response is either to alert the authorities or send that part of the message to the authority involved. Like that breaks the end-to-end encryption even at that stage. They can essentially and because the whole database is just hashes. Journalists, advocates, privacy advocates and everything, you can't even audit what they're checking for because it's all just a bunch of hashes. So your only option really is to just try to brute force the hashes, which, is how you secure Bitcoin, is it creates a massive computational cost because you're just guessing. You just guess and check for every piece of data on the internet to see what they're checking for. But that's not how it's going to happen. What they'll do is, because that's too much work on the client side to check all the hashes and it would be a horrible user experience, they will have a central database that does the hashes, and your client will hash the pieces of data in your messages and send it to them. Now, they do have a big server and they can just brute force. Why not just put in their database the hashes of all the words in the dictionary? Well, then they have your whole message. They have everything you said, and you have absolutely no way to audit or check what they're doing. You have no guarantees whatsoever. It's literally just a convoluted, slow way of just reading the message in total. So there is no, there literally is no compromise here. And I love, that's why I hit that quote from the EFF, is that literally one or the other, these things are mutually exclusive. Either the message is private for everyone but those directly involved, or it is available to others. End of story. There is no middle ground. They are antithetical to each other. So, I don't know. This thing's just a real joke. And you know, it's not new. They've done this like 100 times. Like, literally, they've been trying to do this since the 90s. And we know the excuses they use. Child exploitation and, you know, drugs. Like, it's always the same. It's always the same crap. I don't know, that's why I read the, I mentioned earlier that the reason I read the EFF article is because they have the little take action button up there. Please, if you do have, you know, I know you guys can devote a couple of seconds to this, and I know you guys probably care about it as much as I do, some of you more. and, it'll interrupt, and as minor as that may seem, I agree. It is a big deal to initiate that step from just listening to something to going and go click on the article, find the button, fill out the little form, select your representatives, and complete the process. It's very easy to just not do it. But you guys are in quarantine anyway. Just take a couple seconds and do it. 'Cause it will make a difference that they hear us going, what the hell are you doing voting for this? And you know, herein lies such a great lesson in why we're all here in the first place. Like, we need to be using Lightning and Bitcoin keys to encrypt our conversations. Thank God for some of the Lightning chat apps and stuff that are coming out that will eliminate the platform altogether. And it leads to a whole nother question: is our Lightning nodes now liable for transmitting encrypted payments? Like, what if that payment goes to, you know, somebody who's exploiting children, or somebody who buys a gram of weed in the Middle East? Who fucking cares? But, you know, we need to build these things by default into the protocols. And I'd like to see more developers behind pseudonyms, honestly, because I think they're going to go after innocent people. They're going to go after the builders and the people who want to see the privacy. They're going to go after the Assanges and the Snowdens and the app developers and everybody who calls attention to it and makes them look bad, most importantly. That's Assange's great evil, is that he made those in power look like the incompetent criminals that they are. And you know, like, I don't want to see the developers in this space, the brilliant people in this space, get swept up in that collateral damage. And like I said, we know the excuses they'll use. Like, it's not like we're unprepared for it. Nick Carter has dice for it. You know, they've been doing this again for 30 years. We got the Clipper chip under Clinton, that was, trying to put a hardware backdoor into every single device connected to the internet. And there were a couple actually second and third iterations of that over the years, actually, again, attempting to forcibly put a backdoor into every device by hardware. They labeled RSA a munition so that it couldn't be exported. And that's actually a little bit of cypherpunk history there. Adam Back, the CEO of Blockstream and the guy who created Hashcash, the proof of work algorithm, basically, that ended up being adopted by Bitcoin. He made shirts when this happened. He led a, you know, was a big advocate against it, obviously, and made shirts with a Perl program printed on it for RSA, and then wore it in trips out of the country to export it on his t-shirt. That was total boss. I love that story. But yeah, this, if you guys can take a minute, that would be great. This is This is the whole reason for this space and for a change in thinking of how we do this, because this is all the opposite of security, and this is all the opposite of everything that actually needs to be done to solve so many of our huge problems. The massive identity theft, the hacks and the data loss, and more important information, the more value that gets put on these networks, that gets put on the internet. If we don't solve these problems, if we don't try and test the solutions and actually use them, then they just won't, they won't come. Like everything will continue to degrade. And, you know, God forbid we end up like China. I don't think so. I really don't. I think we're ahead of the game, and one of their most potent tools, the purchasing power of their currency, is that which is most threatened right now. So they've basically dug themselves into a giant hole, and hopefully they won't be able to get out of it as we explore the solutions and test and spread the fix to all the problems they created. So, all right, we're done. I'm done. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed Guy's rant about Earn It, the ridiculous bill right now that I urge you to go check out, the EFF, EFF.org, the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Please support those guys. They're a massive resource for me. Whenever anything, I get any word of anything like this, I'm immediately EFF.org. And I go and I read what they've got, and they've always, you know, they got a great letter to, that they actually sent to Congress about this, and they detail everything out. These guys are fire. So please donate to them if you can. And of course, go send those messages to your representatives. Not represent me. But all right, I'm out. A huge thank you to Swan Bitcoin for supporting this show and for getting the Audible of the Bitcoin space out to many, as many people as possible. March 25th, guys, that is when they are officially open for business. I'm so excited. The Swan Bitcoin Telegram groups are all abuzz right now. And I have got my referral link. Actually, I will drop that in the show notes with the link to EFF. The referral link will get you $5 free in sats. And it will also give me $5. So you'll be supporting the show at the same time. So definitely do that. They're right around the corner. That is Swan Bitcoin. Until next time, guys, take it easy, everybody.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.